Welcome to Parents' Perspective. He's here! He's here! Squealed 5-year-old Timmy, peeking out the front window. Can we go out, please, Mom? 8-year-old Jenny was already tugging on the heavy front door. Of course. Samantha unbolted the lock and held open the screen door while her two kids barreled down the front steps and into their dad's arms. The three of them trundled back up the walk, arms and legs all tangled together, topped with wide grins on all three faces. Hi, honey. Samantha's husband gave her a quick kiss and a wry smile. Well, I'm back. Samantha watched while the kids dragged their dad onto the floor and began to vie for his attention, showing this and that project they had saved up for the occasion. But within 5 minutes, their dad stood up and announced, "That's enough for now, guys. Why don't you go out and play?" and marched woodenly out of the room. The children's eyes were wide as saucers. They ran to Samantha. "Why wouldn't he play with us?" Timmy began, his lower lip trembling. "Didn't he miss us?" Jenny put her hands on her hips. "He didn't even look at my science project." Just then, their dad bellowed from his bedroom, "Can't you guys keep the noise down? Just go outside or something." Both children looked in the direction of their dad's voice and then looked up at their mother, their eyes filled with tears. "What did we do?" began Jenny. "Doesn't he love us anymore?" finished Timmy. Samantha hugged them both, tearing up as well. "We'll just have to work on things," she whispered, "all of us together." From a parent's perspective, what should we know about returning veterans with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with Parents Perspective before, Dr. David Riggs, Executive Director of the Center for Deployment Psychology, is a clinical psychologist and research associate professor at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. As a clinical and research psychologist, much of Dr. Riggs's work has focused on trauma, violence, and anxiety, with a particular interest in the impact of PTSD and other anxiety disorders on the families of those directly affected. Dr. Riggs is the father of one daughter, 11 years old. Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
Thank you very much. It's glad to be here.
What are some of the major misconceptions about PTSD?
I was listening to the story, and I was thinking that one misconception is that everybody who comes back from combat has PTSD. And the truth is that many people don't. In fact, most of the people who are coming back from combat will not have PTSD. They may have some difficulties adjusting. It may take a while for them to feel comfortable again playing with their children. It may take a while for them to calm down and kind of return to what we refer to as a new normal. They're not going to kind of go back to exactly where they were before, but they don't necessarily have PTSD. And that's one of the myths, I think.
That's a very reassuring comment.
In fact, our best guess is that probably somewhere between maybe right around 15, maybe 14 to 18% of people will have full-blown PTSD. Others may have some symptoms of PTSD, but the vast majority will come back and be relatively okay, changed by the experience, but not made ill, not injured by the experience.
How would we know if a loved one has PTSD? Does it work like the story, or is it more dramatic or sort of insidious?
Some of the symptoms can be quite dramatic. People with PTSD can wake up in the middle of the night from a nightmare, lashing out when they do, feeling as though they're in danger and say, act out. I had one experience with actually a gentleman who was in World War II, and I saw him many years later. I saw him, it was probably almost 50 years after he had been in combat. And he told this story about coming home, and the first night he came home, he spent the night for the first time in the bed with his wife. They'd been married before he went to war, but when he came back and the first night he fell asleep, in the middle of the night he woke up in the middle of a nightmare and had thrown his arms out as though to protect him and hit his wife across the chest while she slept. And so every night after that, he would wait for her to fall asleep, and then he would crawl out of bed and sleep on the floor next to the bed. And this was his way of protecting her, not wanting to have this happen again. But that kind of dramatic symptom can sometimes be present. It's not going to be there for everybody. There are also very insidious, I think was the word you used, symptoms, where individuals with PTSD have a hard time connecting with others, feeling as though you who haven't been through the same sort of experience I have can really understand me. And so they start to distance themselves from loved ones and friends. And this is kind of the insidious nature of the disorder, that it, the family starts to have difficulties, not because of any big problems, but just a growing apart, a distancing from one another, and a feeling of less intimacy in the family, less connectedness in the family. And that can create problems for spouses and children as well.
What do we know about the causes of PTSD?
There are a couple of things that we've identified fairly strong connections to. The more trauma that somebody has experienced, the more likely they are to develop PTSD. So for our troops these days, when they're being deployed 3 or 4 or 5 times into combat and seeing many different things each time they are deployed into combat, so many firefights or many explosions and friends or colleagues who are injured, those mount up. And as people kind of accumulate more and more trauma, they seem to have more difficulty adjusting to it. And there are a couple of reasons that might be, which I'm happy to talk about. But the other one that we know is a fairly strong kind of predictor is support, social support. And this is where families and friends can become really valuable. We know that after an event has happened, there's a recovery process that occurs. In fact, we really have begun to think about PTSD not so much as something that develops after a trauma, but rather a failure to recover after the trauma. And that one of the pieces of the puzzle that seems very important is how much support there is in an individual's network, social network, to allow that recovery to happen. So in terms of other causes, there are many other people have started to look at genetic components and biological components. And if you have a history of difficulties in childhood, if you grew up in a violent family, that seems to make you more vulnerable in the future and so on. But those account for very little. They don't explain very much. The two that we think explain the most are how severe the trauma is, kind of how much trauma there's been and how severe it is, and what kind of support system there is after the fact.
Now, are we talking about a support system while they're still over wherever they're deployed or when they get back? If it's while they're there, what do we do?
The answer is both. We need to remember that a deployment, whether it lasts 6 months or a year or in some cases even longer, that's not the trauma. That is, it's stressful, it's difficult, you're away from your family, you're doing very hard work. But the trauma are those individual events that happen. So a unit is in a firefight and my buddy gets shot and severely injured. That's the potential trauma that I need to deal with. And how I deal with that begins while I'm still there and may continue once I've come home. And so when we think of support in the deployed situation, we think about a unit, and soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen function as part of units, and they begin in very small units, very close to a small number of people, and then as they grow, those relationships get more, but more distant. And so we think about one of the things the military trains a lot is just taking care of your battle buddy, the person who's next to you. How do you take care of them? And we know, for example, that units that are very cohesive with a strong leader do better overall than units that aren't very cohesive.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on parents returning from military service with PTSD.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. David Riggs about PTSD in returning troops.
So part of the training in the military involves some counseling or information on how to help other people.
A lot of information, particularly about keeping an eye out on your buddies, looking for signs that they may be having trouble, that they're sleeping more fitfully, that they're maybe not sleeping at all or very little, that they're not concentrating as well. So they're looking for these very subtle signs because they're with them almost 24/7, so they have a chance to see it. And then trying to help your buddy to get the assistance, the treatment or care that might be available. There are mental health professionals who are serving in Iraq and Afghanistan and provide care there, or chaplains. They may seek counseling from a chaplain. So there's quite a bit that can happen there, but really a lot of it's going to happen once they get back home. That's where we look at what families can do. I wish I had all the answers for what families can
do.
I don't. I think, you know, a big part of it, again, is not catastrophizing change. That is, just because they've come back different than they were before doesn't mean that they have PTSD, but being aware that PTSD is a piece of what can happen when folks go into combat. Other traumas as well, and so the folks may have experience working with other types of trauma survivors. Rape survivors often have PTSD. Even people in car accidents can develop PTSD. So they may be familiar with the signs and symptoms, and if you notice that in a loved one, both reaching out oneself and saying, hey, we're still here. I think in your story, the mother talked about having to do this together, but one step at a time, and I think that's a part of it. But also knowing that there are resources available, that there are therapies that can help and treatments that can largely rid one of the symptoms, and that's an important thing to keep in mind as well.
How does having a parent with PTSD affect the family?
Well, it's going to depend a lot on not only how severe the symptoms are, but what the specific event was that brought about the problems. So one of the things that people with PTSD often do is try and avoid reminders of what they experienced, of their trauma. And this can be something relatively outside the family. For example, veterans often don't like to go to 4th of July picnics because the fireworks will remind them of the sounds of explosions and gunfire. My dad came back from Vietnam at the end of June 1970, and 4th of July came along, and we went to my uncle's house, who was also in the military, and he had very quiet, you know, Roman candles, very quiet things. But the next door neighbor set off the first rocket that whistled when it went up, and we were in the car leaving before the third one went up, because Dad was so attuned to how do I stay safe when it sounds like something could hurt me, that getting away was the answer. And you can imagine for a family, this might be disruptive. You know, the two of us, my brother and I are, I don't know, 6 and 8 at the time, or 5 and 7. And I'm sure we were in the back seat screaming because we wanted to watch the fireworks and not understanding why all of a sudden we were leaving. It's going to affect behavior. It's going to affect the way that families interact. We had a case not too long ago of a service member who, while he was in Iraq, saw a young Iraqi boy who was very severely burned in a fire, in an explosion. And he identified that boy with his own son, who was roughly the same age, which led to a very strong emotional reaction when he saw this little boy. But also when he came home then, he started avoiding playing with his own son because playing with his son reminded him, you know, brought back the images of that young boy who had been burned in Iraq. And so what the family sees is he's not, you know, as in your story, he's not playing with his son. And the son is obviously quite hurt by that and upset. And that's a situation where the event itself and his children are closely related to one another in his head. I mean, you know, he makes this connection, and that can lead to even different kinds of problems where they begin to avoid contact because it's a reminder of the trauma, not simply because it's a little uncomfortable.
Are parents in situations like that possibly a danger to their children or themselves?
People with PTSD can be a danger to themselves. We know that for some people with PTSD, suicide becomes an option that they consider. And that's something we're very alert to as clinicians. In terms of danger to others, it's a little bit more complicated. One of the ways to understand PTSD is to understand it as almost like the alarm system is going off too often, that they perceive danger where there really isn't danger. And so you might hear a firecracker go off and perceive it as a gunshot. And so you think there's some danger in the environment. And human beings' reactions to danger is to prepare to respond to it one way or another. And if we think back a long time ago, in my education, they talked about the fight or flight response. And just physically we respond in order to run away from the danger or to attack the danger. And so sometimes what happens when the alarm system is triggered is all that physiological arousal is there, and there's not always something to do with it. And sometimes what ends up happening is that they'll lash out at somebody who's in the environment. It may be somebody close to them, emotionally close to them, like somebody within the family. It might be somebody who just happens to be walking down the street or cuts them off in traffic. It's not necessarily a rational response, but it's all these emotions and physical responses that can sometimes get directed towards people that they care about. And then I'm not completely convinced that this is about PTSD necessarily, but we certainly see this in returning veterans. There's a certain level of risk-taking that can happen. Some people have talked about it as trying to find that same level of high or excitement that happens when you're in a high-stress, intense environment like combat. Others have talked about it in other ways, but sometimes that can put loved ones in danger in an unintentional way. And I'll just share a story that may kind of capture this. Particularly early in the war in Iraq, we found that a lot of service members were coming back and they would drive really fast when they came home. And the reason was that when you're driving on a convoy in Iraq, if you drive faster, less bad things happen. And so they kind of learned that, you know, when you're operating a vehicle, you drive rapidly, you do things like you would change lanes so that people didn't know exactly where you were going to be. And that worked in Iraq. But driving, for example, here the Beltway in D.C., if you're driving really fast and cutting across traffic, it doesn't go so well. And sometimes service members kind of get into that pattern and they don't pay attention to who else is in the car with them. And so if the two kids are in the back seat, they may not always pay attention to that. And so family members could be at risk that way.
Can you imagine if you had a teenager just learning how to drive? A nightmare.
I was giving a presentation once, and this young man, I was talking about driving and issues like this, and the young man raised his hand and told a story on himself. And he had been back from the war for not more than a couple of months, and he got pulled over by a police officer. And as a police officer came up and was talking to him, I'm sure he suspected initially that he'd been drinking, but the first question he asked him was, "Are you just back from Iraq?" And the kid looked up at him and said, "How did you know?" And he said, "Well, we're driving down a little rural road with, you know, a yellow line down the middle of the road," and he was driving straight on that yellow line because you want to keep distance from the sides of the road where the explosions can come. And thankfully, this police officer also had deployed and recognized the behavior and kind of knew, and so he didn't give the kid a hard time. But those sorts of behaviors about staying safe are not PTSD, but they reflect a change in behavior, a change in the way that they work in the world, and that can create problems, even though it's not PTSD necessarily. They might also have PTSD. This kid didn't, for example, but it just was automatic. He would drive down the middle of the road.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on parents returning from military service with PTSD.
For an audio CD of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. David Riggs about PTSD in returning troops. So when someone is diagnosed with PTSD, what kind of treatment is there?
There are some medications that have been tried, and they take the edge off the symptoms that can alleviate some of the depression and anxiety that is there. They might help with sleep. There's actually a new medication they're trying for nightmares. But the most effective treatments we have are psychological treatments, and they fall into a group of therapies called cognitive behavior therapy. And the treatment that I use is called exposure therapy. And what it asks clients to do is to approach situations and memories that make them uncomfortable. So our tendency when something bad happens is to try and push that bad thing away. Many good and caring people say things like, oh, you just have to put it behind you and move on with your life. And we find that people with PTSD seem to do that more than other people do. They really try and push the memories away. And so in the therapy that I do, we're going to ask them to bring up that memory, which will be upsetting, and describe it to us. Essentially walk us through what happened during that horrible day or that horrible hour or whatever it was that happened. And then in addition, we'll ask them to do some work outside of the office where they go back into situations that are truly safe situations, or at least not particularly dangerous situations, but feel dangerous to them right now. The alarm system's going off too frequently. So for example, for almost everybody I've worked with who has PTSD, being in a crowd is an uncomfortable situation. But most of the time, most people go into crowded situations and don't think twice about it. But for many people with PTSD, they're not able to do that. They tend to avoid. So they'll go to the grocery store at 2 o'clock in the morning when nobody else is there. So as part of therapy, we'll ask them to go into that situation and stay there for a while. And what happens is the alarms all go off. They feel like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. And then things calm down because nothing bad really happens. And the body eventually relearns, and resets that alarm system. Years ago, we had a house with a burglar alarm in it that had a motion detector, and we had cats. And that's a bad combination, because in the middle of the night, the cat would jump up on the back of the couch, and the burglar alarm would go off. So eventually, we had to turn down the sensitivity of the alarm system so the cats wouldn't set it off. And we're trying to do the same sort of thing with the therapy. And this is a therapy that has been shown to be extremely useful with trauma survivors from a whole variety of different kinds of trauma. There's another treatment along the same lines called cognitive processing therapy, which uses a little bit of that kind of exposure stuff, but does a lot more work on the way that we think about the event or we think about ourselves having been through that event. Often we hear people with PTSD be very judgmental about themselves. If only I had, or I should have, or if I'd been there a minute earlier, I could have saved his life. And helping them to recognize how the way their thinking has changed because they've been through this event. And again, working to shift it back kind of in the other direction. Not necessarily back to where they were before this event happened. It happened and it's going to change them. But shifting it back seems to be helpful. Much as you would with somebody who is phobic. If I had someone who is afraid of an elevator, for example, my goal is to get them into the elevator. And so if you think about having a fear or a phobia of your memory, we're asking them to do the same thing, bring back the memory. It can be very upsetting, but it's not dangerous.
How do children usually respond to this kind of changed environment?
The truth is obviously that it depends on where they are developmentally. And very young children, they may... Remember, they've also, in the case of our service members, been separated from this person for a period of time. And so depending on how strong that bond was, how strong that connection was beforehand, they may have a difficult time approaching and reconnecting from their side as well, regardless of the PTSD. But the PTSD will make that more difficult from the side of the parent who's come back. So you may see them cling more to the parent who's been home the whole time. If somebody's coming back already feeling I'm different, I've had this experience, and often people with PTSD feel like they're the only ones who are feeling what they're feeling. And so to come back and have a child withdraw or pull away as you approach may be very, very difficult for them. With older kids, if you search the web, you can find many websites that give information about PTSD. So depending on how much information they have, they may do well in terms of recognizing, hey, we've got to take this slow. We're going to learn different ways to interact with mom or with dad. Or they may find they may be even harder to approach because they've already begun that process of their support system is now their friends and not necessarily the family group.
Dr. Riggs, do you have suggestions for resources that we could offer to our listeners?
Specifically to PTSD, one of my favorites is the website of the National Center for PTSD, which is run by the VA system. And the website is ncptsd.org. In terms of kind of handling the stress of deployment, which may or may not include PTSD. There's a website called afterdeployment.org. After deployment is all one word, that's been developed. There are also resources for families who are dealing with a loved one who's come back that are run through or in association with the military, and one is Military OneSource. So service member families who have concerns about their loved ones can seek out information through Military OneSource. There's a certain stigma to coming in for mental health care. So one of the places that we've encouraged them to go is a program called the Real Warriors Program.
Well, this has been very, very informative. So Dr. David Riggs, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I have enjoyed it.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a collection of stories, articles, parenting tips, and resources for parents and caregivers, especially those who love and care for children and teens with special needs. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. 73 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 451 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for generous donations, helping with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective. This is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay, or checks or money orders can be mailed to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.